6, 5, 4, 3. They can't snap it. They can't stop it. They can't win it. Alabama wins the ball game.
Derrick Thomas, linebacker, Alabama.
He was a nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs, not some fun.
Woo! Son, I got to do better than this.
Lights out.
Attacking the cornerback is just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all the offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football! Let's play some football!
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season. And they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there, good morning, welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you, digital managing editor of Town Square Media Tuscaloosa. Yeah, the ability to say editor does not determine whether or not you can be one. Be whatever you want to be, set your mind to it. Mason Woods behind the glass, helping us out as well, giving me the looks when I mispronounce words, keeping me in check. Plenty to get into today. We'll talk with our friend AJ Spur in about 11 minutes, site editor of Roll Tide Wire, get his thoughts on all of the latest developments surrounding the Alabama Crimson Tide and college football in general. The most apt place to start is something that I wasn't aware that was going on while I was on the air, but I'm kind of glad I didn't yesterday. The fact that folks were trying to say that Arch Manning was out on Alabama, that Alabama was out on Arch Manning, it was a mutual decision to break up or whatever. And that wasn't the case, but that was the information that was being poured out during the show yesterday, but we missed it, and I guess it was a good thing. But on the backside of that, we start hearing about this Eli Holstein kid out of Louisiana as well, who's a four-star. He's like the eighth-rated quarterback in the 2023 class, but You hear the folks over at 247 talk about him, and he's relatively close to insane, apparently. Watch some of his highlights, and it backs it up a little bit, too. And I really like what Hank South said here. I think this really kind of puts it in perspective. Bama's been extremely high on Eli Holstein as well as, is it Holstein or Holstein? We'll learn it eventually, I guess, as well as Arch Manning. I don't think it was a situation of let's wait on Arch before we decide on Eli. It's Eli's a top target, and so went ahead and put him in that pick. So it makes sense from a recruiting standpoint. Hey, let's not put all our eggs in one basket and potentially risk losing a quarterback in this class that we would really like to have. Let's go after them both and see which one we get. And if we like them both relatively equally, then we'll be happy with the one that, that decides to come here. And if you're playing the be patient with Arch Manning game, I think you're playing the wrong game in this recruiting class. A lot of folks, a lot of recruits, I should say, are going to follow Arch Manning. Once he makes up his mind, it'll cause a domino effect not only with the quarterbacks, but with also position group players that want to play on the same team as Arch Manning and have offers to do so, right? Have the ability to follow him. Not to mention the fact that he becomes such a massive recruiting chip on his own, right? But if you're playing that game of it's Arch Manning or bust, and we're not going to look at anybody else until we get Arch, even somebody like me who is not shut up about Arch and wants Arch to be in Crimson so badly, you're playing the wrong game. So I think, as per usual, you know, Nick Saban and his crew here, I think if Hank South is correct in his analysis, and usually he is, then I think this is the solid approach to take. And I like the approach. And seeing some of what this Eli Halstein kid has, I think I'd be just fine. You know, I'll be fine either way. In Saban we trust. The Arch Manning thing has a lot to do with his gifts, but it also has a lot to do with the story behind it, right? The mystique, the legacy, everything else that goes into that. And the fact that you look at him and him being, you know, Uncle Peyton and Uncle Eli only mobile, you know, take the best parts of Arch, Peyton, and Eli and all mash them all together, and then you get Arch. Like, I wouldn't spurn that kid just because his last name's Manning and because Eli spurned the San Diego Chargers, right? Like, I think that is a silly lack of thought opinion to have. And if that's your opinion, hey, I mean, you can have it. I don't agree with it. I don't think it is well thought out. So I don't also understand the idea of, well, let Arch go to Texas. Let Arch go to Georgia. Let him go wherever it is that he wants to go. They can have him, and we'll take Eli just off of a couple of minutes of highlight film and some recruiting analysts saying, hey, no, this guy's got the goods, right? Take whoever Nick gets, you know? Like, I want Arch, don't get me wrong. But all that, and this is growth from yours truly, because how negative were we about Ty Simpson? Incredibly. Incredibly negative about Ty Simpson. Who cares, man? At five star, yeah, but excuses out the wazoo. Oh, you just, you know, you're playing against nobodies out there. Arch is playing against nobodies. You know, like, you run through all of those, and what does Ty Simpson come out and do in a spring game? He looked fantastic. Still was the third quarterback, but he looked incredible. He looked like a five-star quarterback. So take whoever you get. Be happy with Eli Halstein or Arch Manning. If you have a preference, fine. I can get behind that. My preference is Arch Manning. But I'm going to be happy if it's Eli Halstein as well. And I know the Crimson Tide have also offered a quarterback out of Matter Day. I think he's in the 24 cycle. But nonetheless, I mean, in saving you trust. In saving you trust. It's going to work out just fine. No matter what. We'll say, if I'm Arch Manning, and you can see that he's allowing Ole Miss with a new offensive coordinator, Florida with a new coaching staff, to kind of get back in there, Arch is going to take forever to make this decision. And if that's the case, you don't have time to be patient if you're Alabama, right? You've got to get your guys in and go to work. But if you're Arch, like, you're doing this exactly the way that you want to, exactly the way that you should. Be patient. Weigh all the options. just because you kicked Ole Miss to the curb earlier doesn't mean that things haven't changed, and you can't come back on that. Same with Florida. If you want to be the guy, what we talked about yesterday with Georgia, like if they ever figure out how to bring in guys like Arch Manning, then that's when they're going to be extremely dangerous. The fact that they won a natty off of what they did last year was impressive, but you can be much, much, much more dominant if you can recruit the offensive side of the ball the way you do the defensive. So if you want to be Arch Manning and you want to unlock every ounce of potential that exists in the Georgia Bulldogs program, go right ahead. If you want to take the challenge of going to Texas, you know, I saw somebody was bragging about Steve Sarkisian's quarterbacks throughout his tenure. And it's very impressive, but it is guys that have struggled in their transitions to the NFL, with the exception of like Mac Jones. So if you really want to step back and you're Arch Manning, I still think you got to weigh in what's going on in Alabama. And the fact that this has been one guy after the other since Jalen Hurts took over. Since Jalen Hurts, then it's Tua, and then it's Mac, and now it's Bryce, and then it's going to likely be Jalen Milroe. Ty Simpson as well, it can definitely fit in that. If you want to let that be Eli Holstein, go right on ahead. Alabama's going to keep doing what Alabama does. If you go to the other places, there's a risk factor, right? And I'm sure Nick's telling them the same thing. Yeah, sure, you can be that guy that goes wherever it is that you go. There's a risk factor there where you have to do it almost by yourself. And yeah, Bryce Young had to do it a little bit almost by himself last year too. But some things are closer to guarantees than what Bryce got. Either way, we'll get to see it all play out and unfold. Plenty more to get into. The NCAA producing an official guideline to this booster crackdown thing, and I've got issues with that. Greg Sankey talking about the college football playoff. Hey, it may be May, but at least we're getting some content pushed through and some opinions about it. When we come back, we'll talk with AJ Spur of Roll Tide Wire here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon with a sunny sky, the high today 86. Clear tonight with a low at 62. Tomorrow mostly sunny, the high 90. And for Thursday and Friday, the weather stays dry. Partly to mostly sunny both days, highs between 84 and 87. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
We aren't going anywhere. Off the Edge is available in the podcast center on Tide100.9.com.
Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that? Jig it out. Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the base and the sunset low. Every day like a Mardi Gras. Everybody party all day. No work, all play, okay? So we sip a little something, lay the rest to spill. Me and Charlie at the bar, running up a high bill. Nothing less than ill when we dress to kill. Every time the ladies pass, they be like,
back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you. Coming out to the hotline, welcome in our friend AJ Spur at Spur FM on the Twitter account, site editor of Roll Tide Wire, the USA Today affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. How you doing today, AJ?
It's hot, Jacob. It's hot. I'm sweaty, but I don't think nothing can be as hot as the Birmingham Stallions, 4-0, only undefeated team in the USFL, and they just got a little bit hotter by adding Mr. Bo. Some argue the best Bo to have played football in the state of Alabama.
I don't know that I can jump on that argument. I think one Bo knows and the other Bo knows injuries. I know that's repressed thoughts that a lot of people have had, but I mean, I'm excited for him. I know a lot of people have been trying to keep up with him and hoping that he would take the most out of his opportunities in the NFL. Still a little bit shocked that the Lions didn't stick with him after five-game stretch that he had with him a few years back. But Yeah, I mean, who'd have thunk it, though? I mean, the Birmingham Iron took over the AAF, the Birmingham Stallions, the USFL gets started, and here we go. They're taking over the XFL. What are you doing? You gonna bring a team to Birmingham? This is where all of it lives. This is where the cream of the crop in semi-pro football lives.
I mean, I don't even know about semi-pro, just football in general. You put a team there, and they will come. You build it, Jacob, and they will come.
As long as it's not in West Georgia.
Exactly. West Georgia. We like to draw a line right over there by the plains, and exactly. Georgia can take all that.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, speaking about building it and they will come, there's a lot of different angles when it comes to recruiting, where we don't have to actually do the Hank South style recruiting analysis simply because the NCAA's got its hands in on so much with the booster things, and we'll get into that here in just a second. But also because we don't have to call Hank South, we got AJ Spurr, who's got his own sources close to Arch Manning. What's going on with Arch? I mean, while we were on the air yesterday, thankfully we didn't see it, that apparently there was some sort of, you know, well, I don't like you and you don't like me anymore thing with Arch in Alabama. Apparently that's not the case, but what is the deal with Arch and his recruitment of Alabama?
So first things first, I am not an insider, you know, not even close to Hank South. My sources are limited at best. However, this is one that is extremely trustworthy when it comes to this situation, mainly because I know this person's getting information straight from, you know, where everybody wants to hear it from,
right?
Which is Arch. So when yesterday I saw that he had narrowed it down to two, and Alabama was, you know, no longer considered an option, and that there was potentially bad blood, I wanted to confirm that was, you know, real or not. And, you know, not only is it not true that Alabama is out of the mix, he hasn't narrowed down his list. And there's still very much so communication ongoing between Alabama and Arch Manning. Yesterday for the Isidore Newman first spring practice of the year, not only was Pete Golding there, but Bill O'Brien as well. So it seems like all they're missing is Nick Saban to get the trifecta together and really reel in Arch Manning. But as of right now, I don't think he's anywhere close to making a decision. We can sit here and throw out schools all day, whether it's Virginia, which he has been tied to, obviously the big hitters like Alabama, Texas, Georgia. You know, at the end of the day, I don't think anybody is going to know the true answer, publicly at least, until he announces it. Up until then, it's all going to be speculation. And anything right now stating that he is limiting his recruitment and cutting down his list is got to be presumed false.
Yeah.
Because there have been numerous times now where it said he's shortening it down to four, or he's finally down to two. And in many instances, not only has it just been flat out wrong, in the sense that he hasn't touched his list, but there was one time a few months ago where it was reported that he was down to four, and in actuality, he had added two more programs onto his list that no one had even considered. So,
yeah,
you know, no one knows the truth,
and that was kind of the case in South's report as well. Is that they Arch had actually opened back up a little bit to Ole Miss, and it was also opened up to Florida as well. So, I mean, this thing is not going to end, I don't think, before his senior season is over, right? Like we're not going to know until probably the original you know, national signing day for him, because he is proven to be so patient through this entire ordeal and take in absolutely as much information as possible. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Manning persona and what so many people think of is the spring of 2004 when Eli spurned the Chargers. They want to believe that there is a lot of drama with this family and that this family hates Alabama. I think Arch breaks the mold on all of that, and to be honest, a lot of Alabama fans should look at his patience and probably admire the fact that he's willing to be so patient throughout this whole thing and make sure he goes where he wants to go.
Absolutely, and Jacob, my take on this is that Arch Manning will not publicly make his decision known as to where he will be playing college football until National Signing Day, not even early National Signing Day. I'm talking the second National Signing Day of the 2023 cycle will be when his decision is known. And it's when he puts pen to paper is when it will be absolutely solidified and the world will know where the next great Manning will end up playing college football. And I say that because with so many kids' recruitment throughout the years, there's so many, you know, edits, there's graphics, there's embellishment. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just Arch Manning just recently made a Twitter account a month or two ago. I mean, we're talking about somebody who, you know, his NIL evaluation, as On3 put out a few days ago, is literally millions above, you know, the next highest person, which I think is a couple hundred thousand below a million. We're talking about somebody who, you know, has two uncles that are Super Bowl champions and a grandpa that's an all-out football legend. All right. He seems to be enjoying high school football. He's enjoying his time as a high school student. He's in no rush to, you know, build an audience or to rile up fan bases or anything like that. I think he's not even all that interested, and this is just an opinion from me personally, in early enrolling, you know, and taking place in spring practices. It seems to me like Arch Manning is just going to do what he does best and is sit back and, you know, just let his own mind make the decision. He's not going to be influenced by any outside sources. He's not going to be pressured into making an early decision. He knows what he's capable of doing on the field, and he's going to want to make a decision that is best for him, playing-wise and academically, as his family has stated time and time again in the few interviews that they've done.
And I like that. I do. I think that is very endearing of a quarterback to have that kind of mindset and to push through. But when it comes to that, you know, while I would like to see more and more athletes wait, you know, to actually make a decision that they are committed to and cut down on the respect my decision notes tweets, Alabama, all the programs in the country, they don't have that kind of patience and they can't afford to. So Alabama is apparently they've got their eyes on another Louisiana prospect who's the number 8 quarterback in this cycle. Surely his name will continue to rise. But this Eli Holstein kid, kind of ironic that Arch versus Eli is now kind of the quarterback race in the 2023 recruiting class for Alabama. But like I said, you can't blame Alabama for not being patient. They've got to find a guy that is ready to be in here in the event that Ty Simpson transfers, Jalen Milroe, you know, transfers or whatever. And the fact that after this season, there's only 2 quarterbacks on this roster.
No, absolutely. And one of the things I'm seeing now, and you alluded to this, that Alabama fans should kind of look at Arch Manning's, you know, I want to say hesitancy, but that's not what it is. His patience, like you phrased it, to make this big decision should be admired. And instead, what I've seen over the last few days of, you know, rumors and reports being thrown around everywhere is that Alabama fans are all in on Eli Holstein, which they should be because he's a great player and everything. But it almost seems as if they're resorting to Holstein as a, well, you know, Arch is taking up all this time. And he, if he wanted to play for Bama and Coach Saban and he wanted to be a legend, he would have said it already. And look, Eli Holstein, you know, probably wants to be here and he's going to be here. And I don't think that's the best mindset to have. I think Arch Manning and Eli Holstein are both stellar quarterbacks. They're both going to be starters in, you know, Division I Power 5 college football someday soon. However, you know, I don't think that Alabama fans specifically should be ready to put all their eggs in the Eli Holstein basket or the Arch Manning basket. I mean, after this season, you said it, Alabama's got Jalen Milroe and Ty Simpson, 2 great quarterbacks, don't get me wrong. However, Eli Holstein and Arch Manning are not going to the same program. And I promise you, once Holstein or Manning, especially Manning, commits to Alabama, don't be surprised if the transfer portal starts heating up again in Tuscaloosa, because, you know, there can only be so much talent at one time in a quarterback room for a single program. And I think Holstein and Manning alike are going to bring that competitive edge that Bama fans are used to seeing from their quarterback. And if Milroe or Simpson or somebody is told that they're not getting a start and they're actually QB3 on the depth chart, because it's what's going to happen, then, you know, transfer portal time.
No doubt about it. And I think I tend to agree with you. I do wonder, you know, because you don't have to look too far in the distant past. Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, same recruiting class. Now, Eli, obviously, his stock's going to go up just because Alabama is looking at him. But if I'm Alabama and I'm looking at that situation, and they know Ty and Jalen better than anybody. But if I'm looking at next year's QB room, I'm thinking I've got to add two guys and not just somebody through the transfer portal that wants to come in and be a GA or a coach or whatever. You got to have three guys on the roster that can play at any given moment, I think, for worst case scenario kind of situation. So I think it's two quarterbacks or bust, and I think that's where you can kind of look and see, well, if you're the most optimistic type of Alabama fan, maybe say, well, why not Arch and Eli and run with that? You may get some cross-eyed looks, but I mean, if you'd have told me in 2017 that both Tua and Mac were going to be first round picks and that Mac was never going to transfer away, we probably would have laughed at you too. And we see where we are now with both those quarterbacks as first round picks in the AFC East as rivals. Talking with AJ Spur at Spur FM on the Twitter account, site editor for Roll Tide Wire. The NCAA collectives, or excuse me, the NCAA cracking down on the collectives. They issued their official guidelines, and this is the one that kills me. The guidance defines a booster as any third party entity that promotes an athletics program, assists with recruiting, or assists with providing benefits to recruits, enrolled student athletes, or their family members. And while the guidance is not intended to question the eligibility of prospects and enrolled student athletes involved in NIL deals, I ask, if a booster is any third-party entity that assists with providing benefits to recruits, enrolled students, or their family members, then what is not a booster at that point as far as NIL goes? It almost seems like the NCAA has created something that's too broad to be able to actually enforce, and they're just trying to announce to the world, hey, the NCAA is not dead. We're actually very much alive. Contrary to popular belief, I don't know what the NCAA is actually trying to prove here and how in the world they can actually convict of any program or player or anything, or even try to shut down these collectives. They don't have the kind of power. Do you see things the same way as I do?
You know, I think you really got it there with the, they're just trying to prove they're still alive. If I'm dead asleep, Jacob, and you wake me up in a panic, I'm going to just jump up and start screaming something. And that seems like what the NCAA did in this case. This is their attempt at clarifying what a booster is. This was, you know, defining the rules. And you know, they made it very, very, very clear. This was not an addition or amendment to the NIL bylaws. They were not creating any new rules or guidelines, just simply trying to clear the air and clarify what some things mean and what can and cannot be done. Instead, what they did was a whole lot of nothing, in my opinion. The definition does nothing in terms of clarifying. If anything, it makes it a little bit more confusing. It clarified that this is certainly a confusing situation, to me at least. And it says, you know, the boosters are not supposed to be speaking directly to players or their parents, and this cannot be an incentive to recruit and commit, nor can it be incentivized for, you know, performance of play, which is understandable. You know, you can't have an NIL deal that says if you break, you know, 200 rushing yards in a single game, I'll go ahead and add $50,000 as an incentive bonus. You know, that was already understood. I don't think anybody thought that was going to be an issue. It seems like the NCAA came out and said, oh, we're going to clarify things you already knew, but for everything you don't know, we're not really going to be touching on that all too much. And, you know, I mean, look at the Jordan Addison rumors with USC, you know, $3 million, a house in LA, and who knows what else was potentially offered to him, as it was reported. And that was before he even entered the transfer portal. So now there's tampering rumors. Now he's in the transfer portal, and he's reportedly considering a whole host of, you know, massive programs like Alabama, like LSU, Oklahoma, and obviously USC. So, you know, at the end of the day, if he goes to USC, are we still going to call it tampering? Are you still going to call that offering him money and inducements to commit to the Trojans program? It just seems like until the NCAA comes out and puts their foot down and actually accuses a school of tampering and puts down sanctions on a specific program and stating exactly what the sanctions are for, we'll never know. I'm convinced at this point they can write 1,000 rules. We'll never know what the rules actually are until they finally do impose punishment and consequences on programs for wrongdoings.
When you said that the NCAA did a whole bunch of nothing, it made me try to think of, well, then what does NCAA actually stand for? And it's no concrete action available. They can't do anything. They're useless. And you know, they've got a calendar year to kind of figure these things out. And, boy, they really stumbled out of the gates on this one. It's redundant and ridiculous for them to even have these thoughts, these ideas that they're going to be able to do anything about collectives and try to define what a booster is in the same sense as what it had always been. Things have changed and evolved. If you give money to an athlete, you're now a booster, but you're also an NIL. It doesn't make any damn sense. One thing that does make sense, and I think we should all be kind of proud of this, is the SEC commissioner. Where the NCAA fails, Greg Sankey always gets it right. And, you know, as the college football playoff expansion talks continue, the fact that Sankey says, it doesn't really matter to us, guys, the SEC is going to be fine. I think it's interesting that he takes that same kind of stance as pretty much every other commissioner is, hey, we're fine at 4, but it's because we're going to dominate at 4. And if you want to move it to 8 or 12 or whatever, we're going to dominate that too. So we're just going to sit in the corner until the rest of y'all make a decision.
I love it. I think not only is it a quote that could come straight out of a movie, but it perfectly embodies Greg Sankey and the SEC as a whole when compared to the rest of college football, especially the Power Five conferences. Greg Sankey's not out here trying to, you know, bring in more money for the SEC at the expense of all the other conferences. Greg Sankey here, at least what it appears to me, seems like he's trying to look out for the betterment of college football as a whole. He's genuinely looking for something that will put a better product on the field for fans while also not sacrificing the integrity of the game. And this sounds stupid to say, but the sanctity of the college football playoff and the national championship trophy and title overall. He knows the SEC doesn't need any changes. I mean, last year and years past, 50% of the Final Four in the college football playoff are SEC teams. And for the second time now, both championship teams playing for a title were SEC programs. So Sankey, like he said, he knows, and everyone else knows it too, the SEC does not need expansion. Should there be expansion, it would be for the betterment of college football as a whole and not just for a money grab. So Sankey saying that, I looked probably way too deep into it, but you know, I really admired it. And if they do decide to go forward with expansion, hopefully it won't just be something thrown together and piecemealed like the NIL laws are.
AJ Spur at Spur FM is where you can find him on the Twitter account. AJ, I wanted to squeeze this in, but we're out of time, but I do want to make sure you at least know the numbers behind this. Tom Brady's contract with Fox, it was just released. 10 years, $375 million. He's making all that money that he saved in the NFL by calling football games when he's all done with this. The rich just get richer.
I love it.
AJ, take it easy, buddy. We always appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. AJ Spurr helping us out there, site editor of Roll Tide Wire. 10 years, $375 million for Tom Brady to call games on Fox once he decides to retire.
That's the best part. It's just whenever you're ready.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to talk to AJ about, it, we'll probably just squeeze it in next week, is, you know, there's a lot of rumors that Tom Brady was going to own AJ Spurr's favorite NFL team, the Miami Dolphins, and quite possibly also play quarterback for them at the same time, which would have been peak. Like, it's been a long time since George Halas was running the Chicago Bears. We need that, right? But if I'm Tom Brady, I don't care nothing about owning anything if I'm getting $375 million over 10 years, especially when I took pay cuts my whole career just so I could be the best of all time. This says it might just be the largest market reset ever. I mean, think about that. Is the fact that Troy Aikman has already signed with ESPN. Collinsworth is still locked in at NBC. Tony Romo just got his contract re-upped with CBS. So, like, all those guys are locked in. Tom Brady's not called a single game, and he's already making way more money than any of them. And he doesn't start until at least a year from now, maybe two, maybe three, depending on what he wants to do. Tom Brady has somehow managed to be the oldest player in the NFL while also the most. It's bizarre because the way that he has kind of taken over social media since getting a Twitter account, a TikTok, and all that sort of stuff, he has managed to figure out how to reinvigorate his own stock. All while still playing incredible football, but good net, $375 million. That's a lot. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk about Sankey's thoughts on the college football playoff next here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Are you receiving unemployment? Your benefits could be at risk. Here's how you can protect yourself and your benefits. Never respond to mail notifying you of a false claim in your name. Never answer a text message asking you to verify your account. And only respond to official Alabama Department of Labor social media pages. Report fraud at labor.alabama.gov/fraud. Brought to you by the Alabama Department of Labor, ABA, and the station. The Alabama Department of Labor is an equal opportunity employer program. Auxiliary aids and services available upon request to individuals with disabilities. Dial 711 for TTY accessibility.
You're listening to Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. This will be the last time I gush over Tom Brady's ridiculous TV contract. Barrett Salee providing this one, $375 million TV contract for Tom Brady. Yeah, it's worth more than the GDP of Denmark, Colombia, Egypt, Finland, and obviously those are relatively large countries, very well-known countries. Many more countries would fall on that list. So congrats to Tom Brady. The rich get richer, even when they take pay cuts for 25 years. Greg Sankey. I love what Greg Sankey said. This quote coming off of the 247 article concerning Greg Sankey and his thoughts on college football playoff expansion, saying, quote, "I was sitting there watching the national championship, and I thought they just thought I wasn't serious when I said we can leave it at four. Quote, people apparently didn't take me seriously. I don't think people heard me when I said we are fine with it staying at four. We can stay at four. This conference will thrive at four. Period. That's not healthy for the rest of college football, but we can stay at four." I mean, that is the most hanging onions quote I have ever heard from anyone with the position title of commissioner. Y'all do what you want. We gonna kick everybody's ass anyway. That's pretty much the stance that Greg Sankey takes here. And I love it Because here's the thing, is with so many of the college football playoff commissioners, when it comes to the college football playoff expansion, they have only their best interest in mind. And I think that is somewhat, it somewhat makes sense because that's their job. Their job is only to care about their conference, right? But like the alliance seems, the alliance, is the alliance really still a thing? Like, remember when that was such a huge, massive deal? The college football alliance, the ACC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12. I guess the Big 12, I don't remember. They don't seem to have the same thoughts as to how to make this thing actually work correctly, right? And if that's the case, like if they can't come together and work for the betterment of college football, then go back to square one, do what's best for yourself. But when you are the lifeblood of college football the way that the SEC is, when you are able to routinely put two teams from the same conference into the college football playoff, a format that is intended to really only leave out one power conference, I think you feel pretty good about yourself, right? You don't have to think about what's going on for the betterment of college football. I think about that for a split second. Last year, the playoffs consisted of two teams from the SEC and the American Conference and the Big Ten. Now, the Big Ten has gotten in there, what, almost every single time? I think all but once, right? Every single time? So, and the SEC has been in every single time. You win the SEC, you go to the college football playoff. No questions asked. Why would the SEC care at all? They already have an automatic qualifier. That's why the rest of the conferences want one. They already have one. There's no concern. There is no, well, you know, if we got two in at four, I guess maybe we'll only get two in at eight or two in at 12. No, they're going to get two, four, however many they can get in, they will. You imagine a 12-team college football playoff expanded with four SEC teams in it? And here I sat, right, and said I think that if Georgia and Alabama played in the national championship again, that would be the third time that Alabama played another SEC team for a national championship, and it would be too much for the rest of college football. Like, they would be like, oh, we got to make a drastic change again. I will say that while it is annoying that the college football playoff committee did not decide on some sort of structured plan on how we're going to get to the point of expansion, because it'll come eventually. But the fact that we're sitting on this for another, 4 years, I think, you know, the fact that you're willing to do that, I think is silly. But if you're in the meantime developing something that would work and does create a parity that exists, then fine. Because I do agree with what Nick Saban had to say here. I don't know that expanding, if this is the best four teams and they played each other, I don't see the logic in it. If we had more teams, there would be better games. I'm not going to say I've never advocated the thought that there would be better games. I think if you have more games, the odds of having better games does go up. But to outright defend the idea of expansion, this is why I say there's a lot of people that come at this expansion thing from my side of the fence with a different logic than what a lot of other people do, the base idea, if you structure things in the right way to where it is 12 teams that deserve to be there or 8 teams that deserve to be there, then you don't lose the regular season. Because what I heard Josh Pate talk about the other day, because he took Mike Leach's example of the Kentucky Derby and said, look, if you just put the horse in the race, the horse has a chance. It's incredibly flawed logic. Incredibly flawed logic. And Pate broke it down. He said, well, what other races did you watch all year? Oh, that's right. The Kentucky Derby is horse racing is set up to where you only care about one race. You might care about three if there's a horse that has a chance to win Triple Crown, right? Or what about X sport or Y sport? What, you know, did you watch, you know, if you want to compare it to college basketball, you know, what regular season games did you watch of St. Peter's to get you anticipated for the playoffs, right? Like they just showed up and did their thing, right? There's logic behind that, and I agree with that. But you have to set this thing up to where you belong there. You have earned the right to be there. And I think with the time that they have, they can set that up. But that's the brilliance of Greg Sankey and the unmitigated gall with which he said what he said. Because it doesn't matter how you set that up. It doesn't matter if you screw this whole thing up again. It doesn't matter if you make it to where it's easier for other teams to get in, or you make it easier on the conferences to make sure that they have one in. Doesn't matter if you set it up where there is an automatic qualifier in six conferences and there's only two wild cards. The SEC in that scenario would still have two teams in the playoffs. Sankey knows he's got not only the best horse, but the horse that has a starting point about 800 feet down the track, right? He knows he's going to win no matter what. His horse brings in the most money. His horse wins the most games. His horse puts out the most draft picks into the NFL. He doesn't have to bet behind anything else, and he doesn't have to be concerned with the rest of college football. He's earned that right, though, I think, at least through his conference. He has earned the right to think solely about the SEC. I do think at some point for this expansion thing to work and to be at the point where it's not just making it easier on other programs, but instead creating something that is earned and has entertainment value, at some point the commissioners will have to be able to look outwards and say, okay, what is best for college football? And that's where you create an inroads where, well, do you want to do what's best for college football? Because if the SEC ever did what is best for college football, then that horse might lose a little bit of strength, right? It might be a little bit harder to win that triple crown all the time. So I get it, and I appreciate it, and I admire it. It's a hell of a quote from Greg Sankey, but I think it does kind of peer into the other side of things where if we're in this for the love of college football, then let's love all of college football and let's make something that does indeed work. We'll take a break, come back, close down the show here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
5G is Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon with a sunny sky, the high today 86. Clear tonight with a low at 62. Tomorrow mostly sunny, the high 90. And for Thursday and Friday, the weather stays dry, partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs between 84 and 87. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Follow Off the Edge on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for live streams and instant analysis. Off the Edge with Jacob Harrison continues.
Tom Brady gets double of what Tony Romo is getting at CBS. What Troy Aikman is getting at ESPN. Brady's getting $37.5 million per year. Aikman and Romo getting $36 million per year. Fox is also paying more just for Brady than Aikman and Buck got when they left Fox for ESPN. And if you kind of run through, like, that is a lot of change, right? We've had kind of the same commentators on the same networks for a really long time. Al Michaels now goes to Amazon, so we get Tirico back in the booth, which I'm pumped about. I love Mike Tirico. He is one of the best ever. But he'll be on NBC with Collinsworth. Fox eventually will have Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady. Romo and Nance, Buck and Aikman are now on ESPN, so you at least have a good crew on ESPN as well. It's a change of football. And not to mention, it won't be long for the SEC is on ESPN as well instead of CBS, so you're going to get that change, which means we'll lose the greatest music in the world.
I listen to it, like, unironically, just at home sometimes.
Right? I mean, you have to. Get you fired up for what's to come down the road. The Jay Barker Show is coming up next. I'll see you tomorrow at 11 a.m. Until then, y'all take it easy. Roll Tide.